Blog Talk Radio.
Something is telling me this show is going to be kind of off the chain, you know, a little hot here, because we're talking about subjects that have been traditionally covered up or spoken about, but not in depth. And for the most part, many people are told to just forget about it and move on and just go on and live their lives. Today's show is about secret sex and shame, and we'll get into that a little bit more. I want to give everyone the telephone number to the show. The telephone number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273, and press 1 if you would like to speak with us. And today we have a special guest coming in today to talk with us a little bit more in depth about some of these issues, and that is the one and only Dr. Bev. Dr. Bev, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Thank you so much for having me as a guest expert on a topic which I'm so passionate about. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, we thank you for being here with us today. And like I said, guys, this is more than likely part one. And if you go and you look at the profile or the information for the show, I gave you all a few links. I'll post those up a little bit later. But before we start that, I just want to let you guys know that you can hear the show here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also hear us on Free Thought Radio as well. And, again, more stations to come in the future. We'll be letting you know about that. And just to let you know, we appreciate you, those in the chat room, those listening, the callers, the people listening to the archives, thank you. We appreciate you. And, you know, normally I give you all a bunch of information about a bunch of things happening in the Free Thought community. They're still happening. You have Center for Inquiry. You have Recovering from Religion, Freedom from Religion Foundation. You have all these different organizations out here that are here to help you. So I just encourage you guys to go and do some research and learn about them and get involved. So, without further ado, I think I want to just kind of jump into this topic here and just, you know, kind of go for it. You know, the storyboard kind of outlined some of the things that we wanted to talk about today. But before we get started, I thought maybe we should define some of the terminology for you. So pedophile, that's one of the words that I used. And according to the dictionary, pedophile is an adult who is sexually attracted to young children. Okay? And then I also used another word called ephebophile. And basically the definition of that is the sexual preference of adults for mid to late adolescents, generally between the age range of 15 to 19. Even though I still consider it all pedophilia, they have the different categorizations here. And then also a term that you'll hear us talking about today is sexual predator. And that's used to describe a person seen as obtaining or trying to obtain sexual contact with another person in a metaphorically predatory manner. So basically, you know, they hunt down the person or they'll study you and then figure out what's happening with you and use all the information they have in order to kind of pull you into their web, if you will. So I just kind of wanted to give some broad definitions. Dr. Bev, if you wanted to go a little bit more in depth with those three definitions, please feel free to do so.
Yes, your definitions are definitely right on. I want to put them in a real-world context. For example, Eddie Long, if we believe the story that the gentleman brought forth in reference to Eddie Long and the court case and all the hullabaloo that happened with him, we can see that Eddie Long, if he is, you know, a perpetrator, if he is a pedophile, he is the kind of pedophile that only likes boys or girls, it could be either one, and he only likes them of a certain range. One of the things I find fascinating in Eddie Long's church is that he has built a ministry for these young boys. He's putting them through college, et cetera, et cetera. But let me not digress. In terms of that kind of pedophile, when that young man, in his case, reaches a certain age, 16, 17, 18, he really no longer has a use for him. He's not attracted to him. He wants to be replaced with someone else. And the myth that is told to many young people is that you're the only one. You are special. But what I believe happened in the case of Eddie Long and the three gentlemen coming together is somebody found out they weren't the only one. That ceremony that he had with them, bringing God into the hotel room and giving this this young man jewelry and ring and, you know, that kind of thing, like he is wedded to him. This pedophile, when he was done with that young man, discarded him. These three gentlemen came together because they realized they weren't the only ones and that they each had the same experience. And so that is how one of the examples, as you can put a pedophile in a certain kind of category. There's different, as you said, different types of pedophilia.
Exactly. And in the case with Eddie Long, he understood Georgia law, in which he knew he really could not go after those young men until they reached a certain age, which is the age of 16. In Georgia, so up until that time, they were being groomed. So you need to understand what we mean when we say being groomed. Some of these older people, they will give them money, cars, gifts, take them on trips, and things of that nature to groom them. And, you know, I made some notes about it because talking about the Eddie Long situation. In particular, T.D. Jakes made a comment when he was being interviewed by Don Lemon. And the comment basically says here, well, and this is T.D. Jakes speaking, not Kim. T.D. said, well, I think if there was actually misconduct, we have to, the young men involved, and they are older men. I think it's a little different from a 10-year-old who can't speak for himself. When you get these older boys who can make decisions, old enough to drive a car, old enough to go to war, if there is a deliberate action done here, we can't take a cash settlement when we really want justice done because it leaves the public wondering what really happened. Now, there are so many issues with that particular statement, and I'm putting the link in the chat room to the transcripts from CNN. And basically, he's saying they're older men, and then he switched it to older boys. Older boys is more accurate. If you're 16, 17, or 18, you're still a child. You are not a man. And so, you know, they're playing with the language and the terminology, because even though those young men were, and I say young men, you know, they were 16 to 18 at that time when this took place, they were still young. They had no real life experience, if you will, because one of the requirements from Mr. Long was that they not have girlfriends and not have, you know, any type of experiences of that nature. So they have not had any world experience or life experience. Secondly, they were ostracized and shunned. The people in the church turned against the victims, and this is what happens in general, and not in every case, but in some cases that I've seen, the victim will come forth and tell their parents. In some cases, the parents believe them. In other cases, not so much. The parent also turns on the child. That happened in Florida, whereas the young lady accused the pastor of impregnating her, and her mom and her father testified against her. Not only did the pastor go to jail, but her parents went to jail as well. And that same particular pastor is out of jail and preaching at a church in which that particular church have banned children from the sanctuary because he can't be around children because they wanted him so badly that they banned their own children. But anyway, I digress. Let's go back. And, you know, these people, they are shunned and ostracized. And it seems as if the whole world is against them. And this is one of the reasons why people do not talk. They do not tell people what happened to them because they're afraid. They're afraid of losing everything, just like we also talk about people not wanting to leave the church because it's their social construct. Imagine being a child or a teenager or a very young adult and to know that if you tell about the atrocity, you know, the horrible crime that has happened to you, that you're going to lose your parents, you're going to lose your brothers and sisters, all your friends that you grew up with. You know, that's a hard pill to swallow. And then, you know, I look at their parents, especially their mothers, who in some of these cases handed them over to the pastor, thinking that the pastor would be able to help her with those kids, would be able to pull them up. And I understand people wanting a better way for their children, but come on. And then the third point I wanted to make, they were poor. That's how they ended up in that situation in the first place. That's how their parents pushed them into that particular elite circle of people because they wanted better for their children without necessarily thinking of the repercussions or consequences of a sexual predator. If, you know, they may not have known, but the whispers had been out about that particular person for a while. When I lived in Atlanta, I knew about some stuff, so they can't say that they didn't know, but I can't say that, so I take that back. Anyway, he got them accustomed to a certain lifestyle, and they liked that lifestyle. They needed that money to continue that lifestyle, and they also needed that money to get away because the first thing they did is they left Georgia and moved to Florida. So, you know, it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting. I wanted you all to see that transcript that he had from CNN in which he talked about that particular issue. It's like, it makes me wonder, why is he making excuses for Eddie Long and, again, blaming the victim, so re-victimizing the victims?
Well, I want to jump in here, Kim, on that because you've brought up many salient points, and a number of them. One is how the child is traumatized. You also brought in terms of the age differential. And then also I want to bring in the power differential between the child and the adult. In this case, we're speaking about Eddie Long. And, of course, for legal purposes, we're saying that all of this is allegedly, okay? So that is that. So you're bringing up several points. One is parents not believing, the age of the children, the grooming and that process, which most people don't understand, that in any kind of pedophilia, there is a grooming process. Yes, there are those pedophiles who will stalk a child, have a particular make and model, so to speak, that they like, and they'll stalk that child. They'll be in parks. They'll be around, you know, schools, et cetera, et cetera. They may even be the coach. They may even be the choir director. They could be the pastor. They could be anyone. And so they stalk that particular child, and then they want that child until they're done with them, whatever the age. More powerfully than that, you brought up the age differential, and you said that you brought up the fact that T.D. Jakes virtually blamed the victim. In therapy, and I've been doing this for a while, it saddens me because this is why many children do not speak up. I've had parents, and I'm speaking particular of a case I had some years ago where the mother who had been divorced for many years, she went into this church. She became a member of this church. She ended up marrying the pastor. I don't know, but I can't get in the chat room right now, guys, so please help me out. How many churches do you know of that do a background check for the pastor? Well, I'm going to tell you, not very many. In this particular church, they didn't do a background check on this young man, this pastor. So nonetheless, she married the pastor thinking everything is wonderful and good. She had three daughters. Her daughters were between the ages of 3 and 9, okay? This man, of course, since he is the head of the church, there's a power differential. He's up there, they're down here. The flock, we don't want you to think for yourself. We don't want you reading any books but our books. And the way that we interpret this thing that we call the Bible, that's how you're going to interpret it because I'm your pastor, I'm God, that's the deal, okay? So there's a power differential there. There's also something in it for the mother. People say, why would a mother go for this? Well, go to my website. You'll see a blog on narcissistic mothers, and that will help you break that down. But going back to this particular instance here where I can tie in the power differential and the age differential, and that is that she married the young man, the gentleman. He came into their home. He liked girls. That was his pedophile. That was his pedophilia. He had also been to jail for this. He had also served time for this. He had been caught in several other churches before he got to that church, okay? So needless to say, there were many people who had to be involved in his inclusion of what he did and how he did what he did because it was so very blatant. He began to rape. I don't do molestation. In Dr. Bev's world, I don't even believe in that. I know it says in the DSM-4 that unless you are vaginally or anally penetrated, that is the only time you are raped. Not in my world. If you are touched, if inappropriately, no matter what it is rape, it is violence to that child. That's how a child perceives that kind of discomfort. So this young man began by raping the oldest girl, okay, telling her that if she did this, then he wouldn't do it to the others, and that if she told her mother would not believe her. Long story short, the kids ended up in foster care. That's how I got to see them. Because you know what? The oldest child realized that this man was also doing it to her other sisters. And when she spoke up to her mother blamed her, said that she was being fast, that she was flaunting herself at him, that this child, a child now whose brain hasn't even maturated to that kind of thought where sex and the nuances of it is not even clear. This child is being told that she is to blame. Well, what I am proud of this little girl about is that she wouldn't let it stop because she knew that her youngest sister was being violated in a most horrific way. She went to school and she told. Well, there is, when you tell a person in a position such as a school, a social worker, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a psychotherapist, if you tell the police, they have to do something. They have to make a report, okay? And so they were reported, and that was how these girls came into contact with me. So one of the things that came up, because the trial took a long time to get there, was that the oldest child should have known better. Excuse me? Excuse me, people, really? Are you seriously? Serious? Emotionally, you think a child can deal, who is only so tall, can deal with a 6-foot man who's supposed to be married to their mother, who is threatening you and threatening them? It is called, that brings me to the Stockholm Syndrome. It is a distorted view of the perpetrator, where that young girl knew, the oldest one, that the only way that they were having the lifestyle that they had, and again, unfortunately, people, it goes back to money many times, to have the lifestyle that they have, to did not have to live in poverty the way they were, to be of some esteem when they went to church. She had a distorted view of her perpetrator. She believed for a while that what everyone said, they loved him. She even thought at some point that she loved him, which is called the Stockholm Syndrome. It's idealizing the perpetrator, feeling him or her, and feeling loving him or her, or feeling grateful for that. Nonetheless, this did go to court. This is another mother who stood up and said that she did not believe her daughter. They had evidence brought in where for all three of the children had taken a physical examination, and the mother blamed it on everybody else but her husband. She ended up choosing to stay with the pastor and let her girls go into foster care. These girls, when I met them, felt helpless. They had difficulty taking initiative, making decisions. They felt shame. Their sense of self felt guilt. They felt that they were the blame. They felt like they were damaged. They felt alien. They felt an altered sense of age, like, you know, how can this be happening? These are some of the same emotions that those young men went through when we were talking in particular about Eddie Long. But I want to spread that across the board, because it's not just there at Eddie Long's church. Trust me, you look in all these other churches, they all have some program, social program for the poor. They have a program for children. I'll go to Sandusky and the football. Look at what he did. Look at what he did and how many people he harmed. Lastly, before I go on a tirade about this, is I often think about these children who are giving off psychological symptoms, and no one is understanding that because they're not being depressed, like, say, the therapist read in her graduate book, then they can't be depressed. Well, I'll tell you this. People of color, especially people of color, they're not going to show depression in the same way. It usually comes out as anger, and these girls begin to act out, and they begin to be promiscuous. So, again, these are all symptomologies of post-traumatic stress disorder when they have that kind of trauma happen to them.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I think it's important that we learn how to identify these different emotions, you know. Again, I've stated before, as an adult, basically I had to learn how to identify certain emotions, because as a child, when I would state that I was feeling a particular way, I would be told, no, because, you know, you're a child of God and that doesn't happen, and all of that. And it's just interesting, because we began to get conflicting messages from our parents and the people around us, and it's extremely confusing. But again, I'm glad that it's starting to come out. And we had someone was asking again about your definition about rape, and I believe you gave the definition of molestation and the difference between molestation and rape. You said, according to the DSM, yeah, rape is with oral or anal penetration. And yes, I guess they're looking for the information, so we can get that link to them, or I'll look for it, and we'll put it up a little bit later so that you'll have the information. But it's happening. It happens across the board. And, you know, these things need to be addressed because of the the Protestant church, and someone made mention of that on the event invite. The Protestant church was basically brought into existence when they protested the ways of the Catholic Church. And when I say the Protestant Church, I'm just saying anybody who is not Catholic. Okay? So with the Protestant church in general, they're pointing the finger at the Catholic Church, stating about the pedophilia and the payoffs and the settlements, and they're mocking and ridiculing them, but they're trying to cover up the issues happening in their churches. And I'm not going to start defining the different denominations. You all are pretty much aware of that. This is not theology class. And basically what they do is they transfer and rotate these people around. It is rare that they'll fire one of these people, you know, especially the ones that are in certain denominations in which they can transfer people to different churches or different parishes. They just transfer them around to give them a new set of victims, to give them a new set of victims when they should have been doing background checks, they should have been checking, they should have been giving people the mental health care that they needed, not only, you know, the children who were victimized, but also the perpetrators, the predators themselves. So why aren't we trying to fix the issue? And then beyond that, why are these other churches and denominations, if you will, why are they pointing the finger at the Catholic Church but yet not trying to clean up the issues in their own churches? You know, they're doing some of the same things, and I don't understand. And particularly in our community, in the Black community, what I see often is they'll tell, you know, the victims, they'll say, you know, either tell them to forget about it, get over it and forget about it, which I think is wrong, or they'll just be silent and act as though the person never said it, that it never happened. You know, I like to call that playing ostrich, hiding their head in the sand. Second, sometimes they'll tell you, touch not mine anointed, meaning you do not talk about the man of God. You do not say things like that about the man of God, because he is a vessel, he is a vehicle that God is using, and he's anointed. You know, they like that word too, and he would never do such a thing. And then when it does come out, you know, even if it was videotaped evidence, they will deny it, or they'll say that the devil made him do it. And one day I'm going to break down that one particular scripture about touch not mine anointed. If you're going to believe that and you're going to teach that, teach it properly. Touch not mine anointed has to do with physical harm, physical, not verbal. If you're telling the truth about someone, you know, you're not necessarily touching them, but that's another story. And, you know, one of the more disturbing, you know, aspects of this is, you know, they'll say that the victims wanted to be victimized or brought it on themselves. And that's just untrue. How can a five-year-old bring that on themselves? How can it's amazing. Just the excuses that are being made, where is the logic? Where is the common sense? It's like it's just being tossed out of the window. And we have a couple of callers. I know we have Raina on the line, and we also have area code 214. 214, who's calling? Hello? Area code 214? Okay, maybe they're not ready to talk yet. But Raina, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was just gonna say, you know, you brought up the Catholic Church or whatever, but I actually read a really heartbreaking story about a couple stories about these young boys who, you know, their parents had basically given them to the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
To be altar boys, and it's, you know, and they basically were taken care of. They had their school fees paid, you know, and everything. You know, in case you don't know, like in a lot of places, you have to pay school fees. Like it's not, you know, free, you know, like it is here, you know. But mm-hmm. And like the children were abused. I mean, you know, quite a lot. I mean, this happens everywhere. And just like you were saying, like they get shipped off, and they usually get shipped off to these remote parts of the world, or, you know, these places where there are lots of indigenous people, but, you know, maybe, you know, the definitions and the laws are not such that, you know, these things are taken seriously, you know?
Yeah.
You know, when children are raped or molested. I mean, it's pretty upsetting to hear about. So it is
very, very upsetting, and I'm glad that we're talking about the issue so that people can begin to bring it up in whatever arena they are in, because especially in the church, there is such denial and disbelief and shame just around sex, period. It just is incredible to me. And so I'm always concerned about, for example, we're using Eddie Long's church. I'm concerned about the children who are still there. Now, just imagine if you were LeGrand. LeGrand was one of the young men who said that Eddie LeGrand, he said his father says that he rarely saw his son after the team left North Carolina for Atlanta. He says that Long encouraged the move following a second trip to Kenya. Can you imagine a little boy going on Kenya, to a trip to Kenya, and what that must be like? Okay? So the suit alleges that Grant agreed, abandoning the potential basketball scholarship career he had, et cetera, et cetera. His mother said that she wrote the bishop, and this broke my heart when I read it, she wrote the bishop thanking him for looking after her son. Do you see this? Can you imagine what abandonment that these young men are feeling? Now, these are now, they're in their 20s. What kind of healthy relationships, interpersonal relationships, are they going to be able to get into without some psychological, emotional help? Not only that, we're talking about grooming. Long also, as many churches do, and all across the board, Long focuses on relationships. With these young men, he had this masculine Christianity thing going on where, you know, they call him father, daddy, he calls him son, you know, they kiss on the lips, that kind of thing. I remember watching BET before it was owned by these other people, they had on the station there Birdman and Lil Wayne, and they were kissing each other on the lips and calling each other father and son. And I'm going, what? And somebody said, oh, well, that's a New Orleans thing. That's bullshit. What that is somebody in these relationships are getting things really, really twisted. When we're calling the pastor your father, I don't think so. When the pastor, like Long, took these relationships with these men, and he suggested that they get in touch with their own inner wild men, okay, and that the women, on the other hand, were to submit to their husbands. Check that. Then the article goes on and says that not only did Long focus on relationships with these students, with these boys, this group of men that he had, he made them take a vow of sexual purity. Think about this. He made these men, these young boys, carry a sex, S-E-X, self-check card in their wallets, listing their visions for life, a favorite scripture, and three things you could do instead of having sex. But you know what? They said to them, if you have oral sex, that's not really sex. It's whenever you take religion, period, that I call it religiosity. When you take religion, secrets, and you mix that up with sex, shame is bound to happen all across the board. And what I am most concerned about are the children who are left behind. We are the people. We the people speaking on this show, you the people in the chat room that I can't get into right now to talk back to you, you are the ones. I want you to go out there. You make a difference. It only takes one person to speak up and say no, no, no. And later on in the show, we're going to talk about why people do not report what I call rape, emotional violence, and sexual violence. Yes,
exactly.
Exactly.
You know, I remember coming up, and I remember there would be somebody in the family, like normally an older gentleman, and people will say, or don't leave your kids around Randy, or something like that. It's kind of like an off-the-cuff type of warning. That's, you know, it's not all that big deal because Randy's still sitting in there, but apparently he's done it enough that people know about it, so don't leave your kids around him. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I grew up and I kept hearing it, I always thought that just pretty weird, you know, especially the more I learned about, you know, say molestation and whatnot. My sister was eventually molested a little bit and everything. But I always found it weird, like, we're going to sit here and just let a pedophile just be around us with no problem, you know. And a lot of things, you know, the more I grew up, the more I hear a lot of stories in which you have people who are so, like, this mother is so enamored with this guy that either she allows her child to be molested, or when she finds out that this guy has molested her child, she will turn a blind eye to it or blame her child for her being raped or molested by the dude that she's with. And everything. I've heard a lot of horror stories when it comes to that, and it's always been something that has really broken my heart that some people are so out of touch or out of sync or disconnected that they can allow people they love to be victims and see nothing wrong with it, because whatever dopamine effect they're getting from this guy, it outweighs their love and concern for their child. And it didn't. I liken that to kind of like the Eddie Long thing, is that, yeah, he did four guys as we know of. You know what I'm saying? He took advantage of that. I mean, you gotta look beyond that. This guy knew the law in Georgia was the age of consent. He waited for that time period to pass. This tells me that it wasn't God that prevented him from molesting those kids when they were 13 or 14. It was a Georgia man-made law. Otherwise, he'd been doing them then. So, you know, and you look at that, and you see these people still going to this church, and they're still supporting this guy. It's the same thing. They're more wrapped up in the man, and they're more wrapped up in the man than anything. They worship Eddie Long. They're not even worshiping Jesus. Or they don't even see, they see Jesus as a byproduct of worshiping Eddie Long. You know, I can only liken it to some type of dopamine effect, in which it's like the rat hitting the button, getting this high every time he hits the button. Never mind what consequences are falling from that, they have to get this hit from this person or whatever.
Yeah, I call it that Stockholm syndrome, and you bring up an excellent point, and that is what would make somebody leave their children with a person that the family already knows the inner sanctum here, already knows, okay, in my case, I'm going to call him Crazy Uncle Eddie, okay? I worked in substance abuse for several years. And while I worked in substance abuse, I would take every client that nobody else didn't want. If you could do $500 a day worth of drugs and whatever your habit was, I wanted you on my caseload. People say you're crazy. What would make you want that? Because those are the people who can teach me the best. And I found some of the most intellectual and beautiful human beings while doing this work. One gentleman in particular, he had been in rehab several times trying to beat his addiction. And in my gut, I knew that there was a story underneath the story underneath the story. And doing his psychological assessment, which went hours, which was unheard of, but I knew this young man needed this, okay? He was in his late 30s by then. So he begins to tell me a story about another little boy in the family and how this little boy, Crazy Uncle Eddie, he was the babysitter for the neighborhood's children, his family's children, et cetera. Now, what would make you leave your child with someone that you know is a pedophile? And for this young man that I'm going to tell you about, his own sisters, cousins, his mother, because he had a teenage mother, she was raped by him between the ages of 6 and 12, okay? I call that penetration. Don't even take Dr. Bear there, okay? If you are touching a child before their brain is even macerated biologically, chemically, to understand what sex is all about, and especially for little boys, we talk about girls all the time, but you know what? There's a lot of boys and men out there who have been perpetrated upon, and we haven't heard the last of it yet. And what happens, especially with boys, I'm getting off the subject here. Why would someone leave their child with that? Well, he's home, he gets a check, and the mother of this young man that I'm talking about believe that it only happened to her? Now, I want to just give that logic again. If you believe that it only happened to you, you think it won't happen to your son because he's a boy. Well, first of the month, crazy uncle got his check. Guess what? He couldn't drive, so he got one of his friends who was also in conclusion with him with all of this, with these neighborhood children and that kind of thing. They were all stalking and doing horrible things to children. He would make this young man, because the car would be full of children, he would make this young boy, you know, when before the age of five, sit on his lap while they were going to the store. And crazy uncle would promise them candy and this and that and da 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 da. And while he was sitting on his lap, crazy uncle would get a hard on. Yeah, this Dr. Bev, mm-hmm. Yes, I do go real and raw like that. Let's just put it out there. I'm a reality psychotherapist. Uncle would get a hard on. Little boy being a little boy, like any little boy, this is uncomfortable. I don't feel good. He is squirming. He's moving. And the more he squirms and moves, and just think about what his brain is thinking. He's sitting in this car. There are other children here. There's another adult here. Can someone not see what's going on? Mm-hmm. Why isn't anyone speaking up? So he says he remembers as he grew older beginning to cry because he didn't want to sit on his lap and how he would be forced to sit on his lap. That was how crazy uncle began grooming him. Do you understand that?
He began picking up
this young boy drugs because the mother wanted to get another check for him, right? So the kid was taking Adderall and Ritalin and all this kind of shit. For what? There was nothing wrong with him except that what? He has PTSD because he's being raped. He's not attention deficit. He doesn't have hyperactivity, but she's getting a check out of that. So we're going to let that be the reason why. This young man got hooked on drugs before the age of 12. And I'm talking about serious drugs, heroin. Okay? He got hooked on drugs. Even when he had the courage at about age 16, at a family gathering, to say to crazy uncle, get that boy off your lap right now. You know what you're doing. And he just went off. He went ballistic, okay? Do you know his family turned on him? His social construct turned on him, just like the church turned on these young men who they said Eddie Long perpetrated them. His own family turned on him. They didn't believe him. They shunned him, and they kept crazy uncle there. And his mother, who knew that crazy uncle had did this to her when she was younger, do you thought she spoke up for her son? What a sense of abandonment.
So you're saying that if the family would still give the kids over to crazy uncle, what chance does a child still in Eddie Long's congregation have?
Exactly. Well, that's where we come to reporting, and that is I'm going to encourage everyone, and we'll give some signs later of what it looks like when a child is being sexually abused. Go ahead.
One of the things you were saying earlier, which is very, very true, and maybe the reason why Eddie Long chose to mess with the young men is because they are unprotected. They are unprotected. Mm-hmm. If they are the sons of single moms, so there is not a male figure around, it is easier for him to spend time with them. Oh yeah, take my boy. Do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Make him, because you real good, Pastor. And I agree. To me, the worst shame out of all of this is not what Eddie Long did and how he pimped those boys and gave them some candy, a toy, introduced to a celebrity. That's a pimp move, okay? Bought him a car, okay? That's a pimp move, okay?
Yes.
Look,
mm-hmm.
I broke this down on stage like this. I'm a stand-up. And how I did it was this. I said, look, if I wanted to be a pedophile that preyed on some young men, I would start a church. I'd build my flock. I start preaching the anti-gay sermon. Then on the weekends, I'd have un-gay you seminars. And when
mm-hmm.
you came to me for help, I pull my dick out. Got you.
There you go.
It don't take no Lex Luthor criminal genius to figure that out. Okay, it is easy. And then all you got to do is memorize a couple passages and a couple stories to go along with those passages, and somebody will let you have their kids. Of course, why wouldn't you do that? You're already taking a chance, and he got away with it. And the reason why they didn't, and the reason why they don't turn on the preacher is because then they would have to admit that they have been a fool that entire time, given that person money every Sunday. And they would rather send their kid into the nasty web of a pedophile than admit they had been tricked into giving a dog, rotten dog, their money. They're like the person.
Yeah.
They're like the person that sits in front of a slot machine, and you know it ain't gonna pay you off, but you can't. You can't get up now. You got to keep trying to get your money back. He got you.
All right, now, Travis, you just got an amen from me. You are absolutely 100% bolded and underlined correct.
Thank you.
That's it in a nutshell.
Hey, and another thing, Kim, one other thing about the Eddie Long thing, just break it down even further and simpler.
Uh-huh.
If one person says you did something, it might not be true. And if two
people,
say you did something, it still might not be true. Because I can say, you say it's true, I'll say it's true, and we can both get paid. But if 3, 4, 5, 11, 30 people say it's true, I'm still not saying it's true. But it's truer.
Baby, you know what? That takes me back to your one book. You know what, Joe? I love that. I've never forgotten that. Because another thing that happens with this is it's diseducation. We have dumbed down our society so much that people are just willing to just drink the Kool-Aid. Don't want to read a book themselves. Hell, let's listen to it on Kindle, why don't you? No, we don't want to do that. We want to just listen to what this person has to say. And because he's a pastor, there's that power differential, and you're right. It's a pimp game. Some people do the dope game. Some people do the pimp game. Some people do the God game. Look, hey, baby, all of it is what?
It's all
it's one in the same.
It's all the pimp. Look, I broke down pimp. Understand this. A pimp is anyone trying to get A pimp is anyone trying to get you to do something that benefits them more than you. So if you have a job at all, you're a hoe. And if your boss is the owner, that makes your boss your pimp. But if your boss is not the owner, that just makes your boss the bottom bitch. That's the hoe the pimp trusts a little more than the other hoes. Okay? Kids pimp parents. If you're a parent and you do what your kid wants you to do instead of what you should do as a good parent, you're a parent hoe, okay? And if you do it because you don't want to hear the baby cry, that makes a baby's cry a pimp slap, okay?
Exactly.
And that means we're all pimps.
Wow.
The fact that they did an experiment that I saw, you know, I can't remember the exact details of the experiment because a while ago, and I think I saw it on Nova or PBS or whatever. But they took something, they did an experiment to see how willing people are to follow orders. You know what I'm saying? You take ordinary people who ordinarily wouldn't do this, give them someone with enough authority to tell them to do this, and they'll do it whether they agree with it or not. And that's how you get soldiers who commit atrocities and stuff like that, and they went into a lot of details and stuff. And so I kind of liken that to religion. It's like you got good people, you got bad people. To get good people to do a bad thing and feel good about it, you need religion. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You don't ordinarily get people who feel it's necessary to set somebody on fire. But religion, if your religion says set this person on fire for being a witch, that's what you do. So if you're going to if you got Eddie Long sitting up here or any church leader sitting up here telling you, give me your money, you know what I'm saying, so I can maintain my standard of living, which is 100 times better than yours. If you have, you know what I'm saying, a leader who is saying, who you even suspect of messing with children or messing with boys, girls, whatever, it doesn't matter what sex it is. The fact is he's doing it. Well, in his case, it does, and as he marched against homosexuality. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? If you have this authority figure who is saying you know, who was giving you this vote of confidence, who was giving you this embodiment of leadership, he can get you to do things you normally would not do. And this is why a normal dude, Chuck, down the street, if he had been molesting four boys, they'd have strung him up from a tree in the neighborhood. Eddie Long do it, either he might not have did it, or the kids, or the boys may have had something to do with it. Either way it go, I'm still going to go to this church.
I posted something about the boys and on my page, Facebook page, and Facebook.com/TheBigFunny, all one word. And a friend of mine who's deep in the church, he said those boys knew that that was wrong. So, but how are you going to blame the boy? How are you going to blame the boy? Because if it was a 10-year-old girl or a 16-year-old girl, you would not have blamed the girl in that situation. And
but,
so,
oh, but yes, they would have. Yes, they would have. They would have been like,
there are plenty
that
of people that
tail girl.
That. Yeah.
That fast tail girl. I've heard it. I've seen it in my own family.
Yep.
And
friends. Yep.
And they blame the little girl. Well, she fast.
Uh-huh.
Yep,
preacher,
actually,
preacher would have been just fine. Preacher would have been just fine if she hadn't put those tight pants on her ass. Okay,
right.
I see them doing that shit. Yeah, absolutely they would. Why wouldn't they? Because they are confused.
I was gonna say, actually, I think I read a story about a young girl in Chicago. Maybe a couple years ago, she was raped by close to 40 men between the ages of 14 and 30-something. And all the men in her neighborhood were saying, all the people in her neighborhood were saying, oh, she deserved it. She was fast.
Uh-huh.
Like, there are porn stars that don't work that hard. You know what I mean? Like, don't want to work that hard. You know what I mean? I mean, are you kidding me? Like, seriously? What woman would allow that to be done to her? That's abuse.
Exactly.
You're
right. You know what I mean? Because even a porn star, she'll do a scene and take a couple of weeks off, you know, rest her holes. Come on.
There you go. Well, I want to go back to just giving out some facts here. And again, this is about child abuse. This is about sex. This is about the church. This is about religiosity, okay? It is a fact that child abuse is more than bruises and it's more than broken bones. While physical abuse, yeah, we might be able to see the signs of that. Other types of abuses, like sexual abuse and emotional abuse, child neglect, they leave deep. Trust the sister on this. Very deep, long-lasting scar. Some signs of child abuse are much more understated than others, okay? Here's a myth. One of the myths about, especially, you know, when it comes to the church, you know, well, that can't really happen like you just pointed out because it's the pastor and we don't see any marks on him or her and they seem to be behaving well and da-da-da-da. So if it's not violence, if it's, you know, not anything we can take to the police, okay, we'll just let that be myth number one. The facts are physical abuse is just one type of child abuse. Neglect and emotional abuse can be equally as damaging. Kim gave the story of the young man who's in Florida who is a pedophile. He's labeled a car-carrying pedophile. They put his butt back in the pulpit. What? And they're going to let the children leave out of the church? How sick is that? Yes, neglect and emotional abuse can be just as damaging. And because they are subtle, other people are less likely to intervene. And that's
right.
Actually,
well,
so that we can talk about it and get it up and out there.
Well,
oh,
think
yes.
about it. The threat of losing your family and friends is there in either case, right? If it's a boy, they're doing anti-gay thing. Anybody doing that, blank. And so that makes it harder for them to come out and tell on the situation. Same thing if they were going to do it to, think of messing with a grown woman in the church and start doing the sermon, the adultery sermon. And anybody caught messing with somebody else's man should never be talked to again. It's easy to do to people.
Exactly. It happens all the time. But we're going to bring Jim into the call. Jim, are you there?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, Jim, and yourself?
Hey, pretty good. So I say, great show. But I just got to say, I got a little bit of a story to tell, actually. Myself, as I grew up, I always went to Catholic schools. And I remember when I was younger, I remember there was, like, almost every school kind of like had a priest assigned to it. It was kind of like the school's priest. He would do a lot of the sermons and, you know, some other things, you know, basically try to get people to come to his church. And I remember there was a time, or the priest at my church actually, at the school that I went to also had a summer camp that every time when it came close to summer, he'd always try to tell stories about the summer camp and tell kids about, oh, you know, you got to go to this camp, it's so great and this and that and everything. And, you know, like when I was younger, you know, I wanted to go, but my parents would always say no. And I remember when I'd ask my parents, why not? They would always say that they hear that my parents would always tell me so that they hear that they do things, you know, to little boys at those camps. And I didn't understand what was said that.
Oh, Jim, you're kind of cutting up there.
Oh,
can you hear us okay?
Yeah,
you're kind of cutting in and out there on us. It's kind of hard to hear. But go ahead. Let's see if it straightens itself out.
Can you hear me now?
Much better.
Okay. Yeah. Basically, I remember I was in school one day, and the same priest talked time. And he asked me, he said, excuse me, are you going to be going to the camp this summer? And I was like, no, unfortunately, no, I can't. You know, I said, no, unfortunately, I can't. My parents will allow me. And then he was like, oh, okay. And I remember he smiled at me and said, man, you should try to go, man. You know, like, you'd have a great time. And, you know, that was it. He walked away. And after that, you know, like, I never talked to the priest ever. I never talked to this guy or whatever. And I just kind of thought it was weird, you know, just for him to, like, ask me that and everything. Well, how many years later, I ended up finding out that that priest actually molested a whole bunch of boys at that camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, like, now as I look back, I said, man, if he came up to me and was asking me if I'm going to go to that camp at that time, and if I did go, man, I'm sure I probably would have been one of the victims. And
yeah,
it's sad because there's another teacher at that school, and she was like pro, like, you know, for this priest. You couldn't say anything bad about this priest. And she had a son, and the son had like these anger issues, you know, like as soon as he get mad, he would just go ballistic. And now I look back and I sit there and I say to myself, man, I'm sure he was probably one of the victims. And the worst part about that, when he was going through this, he couldn't have went to his mother, because I know for sure she would have like said, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. The preachers would go and search out the most pious person to attack their kids, because they got nobody to go to, right? That's what Christopher Hitchens said in his book. He said, yeah, we knew what was going on, that the, you know, the boys who were skinnier or prettier or fair-haired, fair-skinned would get a little more attention from the priest. Mm-hmm. And nobody said anything, because we didn't want to put our families in all that kind of mess. Right, you know, that boy's sitting there thinking, my mom would be laughed at and being shown to be a fool. So I just got to take it. But I'm
surprised. Oh, yeah, and
what we're talking about here is shame. And thank you, young men. Thank you very much for having the courage to share that story and to give an example of your friend who did go to that camp, which validates what I have been saying for years. Everyone doesn't emote the same way, and especially when it comes to children of color, adults of color, the way that we might show depression and anxiety is different. Anger is one of the first ways that I know that my client is having depression, because that's how they're showing it, by having depression, okay, by being angry, by going into a rage over some small insignificant thing. It's all of a sudden it just gets blown. Their shame trigger has been there. So anger is definitely there. Anxiety, I just want to give one example of this. You've seen guys hanging out on the corner and they're doing they're growing their dreadlocks. Look at the young men. Look at the young guys, because I see, you know, women starting their babies with dreadlocks, you know, even as, you know, a couple few months old. But I'm talking about the little guys that I see standing at the bus stop in the morning going to school. And they'll be twirling those locks and twirling them and twirling them and twirling them like they're in another world. Guys, in Dr. Bev's world, that's a sign of anxiety. That's how that boy, that young man, is showing you that there's a story underneath the story, and he's got a lot of stuff on his mind that he's worried about. Lastly, I want to point out for the gentleman here that the effects on a child who has had these horrific atrocities perpetrated on them, as they grow older, some of the effects are going to include a lack of trust and relationship difficulties. I'm telling you guys, this is for real. If you can't trust your parents, if you can't trust your preacher, if you can't trust your primary caregiver to do the right thing for you, how are you going to trust someone that you say you want to fall in love with, or they say they're in love with you? Yes, you're going to have some trust issues. The next effect of that in terms of the emotions is that the core feeling of being worthless, damaged, not being enough, not feeling enough, not being feeling worthless, feeling damaged. If you've been told over and over again as a child that you're stupid, you're no good, stop lying on your pastor, stop coming back to me crying, you better go ahead and go off to that church, that Sunday school, nothing is happening to you, boy, you better stop lying. If you're being told
it makes the victim go repent.
You know, and you know, the thing about it is, no, it's not like nobody's fooling everybody. I remember, even when I was growing up in the church before my grandma became a Jehovah's Witness, and even thereafter, when I would be invited to other people's churches, you know, a lot of stuff going on. You know, Pastor Smith is behind the scenes doing Sister Johnson. You know that. You sit there in the pew and you listen to people talk long enough. You know this facade that's going on here. You know these people are screwing each other, and they hate each other, and they're cheating on each other. You know somebody's ripping somebody off. And then when somebody makes the accusation forthwith and outright, now all of a sudden it's impossible because he's the pastor, he's a man of God. You know what I'm saying? Now everybody knows this is going on.
Well, you know, take what you said and just say it a little shorter. Churches are some of the people are some of the most gossipiest folks on the planet.
Yep.
And so how do they turn their gossip off when pastor is raping kids? How are you gonna turn it off now? Right? You gossip every little thing, from who got a new hat to whose purse don't match, but you're gonna turn it off on this? Y'all rotten. Y'all are rotten.
Exactly. But that goes back to something that I stated earlier, when, you know, they'll tell you to not gossip, and if you weren't there and you didn't see it, then you don't know if it's true. Or they'll start throwing scriptures about judge not or touch not mine anointed. And what they do is they take those scriptures, and they'll take several different scriptures and compile them into to substantiate a point that they're trying to make, and that's called proof texting. And they do that all of the time, and they use the Word of God because they know the majority of their people aren't reading the Bible. They will tell you that they don't read it either, but that's another story. But they do those things to basically silence their members, and they know exactly what to say, what to do. If using the scriptures do not work, what they do is they'll turn the congregation, you know, against them. Because I've had a pastor tell me to shun someone after they left the church. And I'll give you a real-life example of something that I know firsthand. An old friend of mine, you know, this is, you know, we an old friend of mine anyway, she had a son. And we were going to one particular church. I went to church with them because of pressure or what have you. Anyway, her son was a musician. And this is a relatively well-known church and choir. And she basically allowed her son to go and play for that particular church because the pastor was insisting that, you know, he come in and that he, you know, that the young man, you know, play the instrument. Now, we had already heard a little scuttlebutt about the pastor, and I talked to her about it, and she said, yeah, I heard those things too, but I don't care. As long as this can help my son get to the next level, that's all that matters. And we kind of went back and forth about that for a while, and finally I just, you know, dismissed it as an exercise of futility to try to argue with her. So instead I started focusing on the pastor, and he knew that I was watching like a hawk. So, you know, lo and behold, the church had no more money to pay him as a musician. So, you know, they kind of let him go from that little position. But it wasn't because they didn't have the money. It was because the pastor knew that I wasn't going to go for the okey-doke. Okay? Same young man, different church. Because I left that church, and he followed me to the new church. At the second church, you know, I was on the minister's board at this particular church. And, you know, was held in high regard, blah, 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 you know, which means absolutely nothing. And basically he was playing over there as well, but it was a different type of scenario. Well, come to find out, the youth minister, young lady about the age of 24, and this young man was about 16 at the time, and come to find out that her and the young man, she basically was giving him fellatio favors. And when I found out what was happening, when me and his mom got wind of what was going on there, I did everything not to snatch that young lady by her neck and pull her over the pew. Because she betrayed my trust. She violated that young man. And then the pastor convinced my friend to not press charges, although I did report it to the state because it was my obligation as a minister. I had to. And I reported it, and nothing came of it because the pastor tried to cover it up, and my friend refused to give any information, and the young man, he was embarrassed, and he was upset with me because I was making a big deal out of it. You know, I resigned as a minister. I left the church, and he wouldn't leave, and there's nothing I can do. But in that regard, the same young lady that was, you know, the pastor said a few things about her, but he did not sit her down from her position, and come to find out, that was not the first young man she had taken advantage of in that regard, and she was married with a child. And we all had the suspicion that her and the pastor had a little sexual relationship. Well, fast forward a few years, he married her a couple of years ago, and marriage only lasted a few months, and it was annulled. So what I'm saying is predators are not necessarily dirty old men. They can just be horny young women. And from her behavior, from what I remember of her behavior, she had all of the symptoms of a young lady that had been molested herself. So we have to look at it beyond. I'm just giving you all a firsthand, you know.
I wish she had said she was molested herself, Kim, because before you said she was molested herself, I was going to say, you know, I really don't want to complain too hard about somebody giving out free blowjobs. So until you said that, I was going there, and he's, you just ruined it.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to have to help you with that one right there to not go there, because promiscuity is, especially in young girls, promiscuity is one of the symptomologies that they themselves have been raped emotionally and sexually.
So then if somebody's really being acting promiscuous, then somebody should say to them, hey, girl, where'd you learn that? Right?
Exactly. When
right
you
away.
See that brings
like
someone
that?
In the chat room asks, do abused children, do they always grow up to be abusers? Well, that's a myth. Here's the fact. it is true that abused children are more likely to repeat the cycle as adults, unconsciously repeating what they experienced as children. On the other hand, many adult survivors of child rape have a strong motivation not only to protect their children against what they went through, but to become excellent parents themselves. And those are the parents that I see coming to me for counseling and for services because they know they're being triggered. They know that something is wrong. They're coming out of this place where they thought was their one safe place, church. But they found out what was happening in that family, their home family, that dysfunction. It was the same dysfunction that Kim described going on in the church. So, yes, abused children don't always grow up to be abusers, but I would say to parents, if you see your two and your three-year-old and they're doing inappropriate behaviors with each other, I'm like Kim, I start paying attention too. Because something is going on. Pedophiles teach, they groom. Another type of pedophilia is a type of pedophile who wants to have two children raping each other. They can be the any way, and I have done worked with even a six-month-old who was penetrated, okay? So these kind of pedophiles, they start when the children are really young, 1, 2, 3, 4 years old, okay? And they start having the children interact, see porn, be sexual with each other. They like to take pictures. They like to see it on camera, that kind of thing. At a certain age, that child is already ready.
I totally agree with you on that. I remember in high school how the freakiest chicks you knew in high school were the people with the strictest parents. There'd be a lot of them, especially like these two sisters whose parents were Seventh-day Adventists. And there was a girl I dated who even at 18 wasn't allowed to talk on the phone to guys and everything like that. Yeah, they, you know what I'm saying? It was well known how experienced they were, that their parents had no idea about because they did, you know what I'm saying, they would have been treated differently. The point is, they didn't talk to their kids about sex. They just said, don't do it in the story. You know what I'm saying? And no one ever sat there and said, why you should wait, why you should be more careful, why you should choose, or why you should choose differently, why you should choose better, why you should think about this before you do it. Here are the consequences. Here's the information I can use to help you based on my own experience. They just said, don't do it, or the Bible says don't do it, or this will happen if you don't do it. And so now you got other people out here. The human body is a receptacle of pleasurable and painful sometimes emotions and sensations, and no one's telling them that, hey, this feels good. Maybe I should stop and think about this before I do it. No, it happens, and now you got this girl going around school getting all this popular acclaim in the high school or whatever because a lot of guys are paying her attention for the wrong reason, but nobody told her why this is a bad thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I know the girl that I dated, she went to college in Arkansas. At 19, she had a child and came back home. Her parents were so strict and so into religion that they would not allow her to talk to her 15-year-old sister after she got pregnant out of wedlock. She was estranged from her sister. She couldn't come back to the house. She had to get an apartment in Atlanta. As of right now, this is about 7 years ago after I found this, she's on a second divorce with 4 kids, and she's still not allowed to talk to her sister.
Right, and religion teaches you who to hate. You know, to go back to what Dr. Bev was saying about these pedophiles making them, you know, the kids do it to each other. Y'all remember when Oprah had like the 200 men that were molested on there? She had Tyler Perry on there.
Yes. And Powerful episode.
Yeah, and one of the boys was talking about what happened to him and his twin brother and how, you know, the preacher or the priest would come over to the house and tell their parents that they had some candle duty to do. And then they get back to the church and they'd be in a room where there'd be 3 or 4 or 5 priests who would duct tape them to the ground and rape them. And he was breaking down that it started out where the priest would do stuff and like mess with the paddle on their ass, and then he would rape them, and then he would say, either y'all do it to each other or I'll do it to you.
Right.
That's another
pimp. I want to take this one level further because, Travis, you just hit on something that's real significant, okay? And I'm going to kind of move away from the topic, but just a bit. In many households, be it people of color or otherwise, when chastising their children, many people still believe in hitting, whooping, beating their children, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go back to slavery just a little bit and bring a little history here. One of the ways that they used to shame the slaves, especially the men, were to hang them up by their hands and beat them naked. When you take a paddle, now, men, this is Dr. Bev, y'all just go here with me on this, all right? Y'all know I'm mm-hmm. real and raw. If you hit a man or a woman, child, boy, girl, whatever age, if you hit them hard enough on their buttocks, let's deal with a boy for a minute, on their buttocks, their scrotum is there, their penis is there, okay? Like you just mentioned, pain and pleasure, in Dr. Bell's world, baby, it's just a tiny slice, a line in between there, a very fine line, okay? So, but let's get back to this. So you take that paddle or that belt and you whip that child. First of all, you got the child naked.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of parents still beat their children, punish their children, pull your pants down, go in the room and just sit and be laying across the bed and be waiting there for me because they don't want the kid to run. They think they're teaching them a lesson. I even had one mother come into my office and she said, well, I do that to him because I don't want the police to get him. I'm like, really? Oh, the police will have him because he's going to be drug addicted, not be able to hold relationships. He's going to do all sorts of things that we can't even imagine. Yes, sooner or later he will get there. I digress. Let me get back to my story.
No, you're right, and Dr. Bev.
When
you're right.
Hit on that bottom with that paddle, I don't care how old that child is. I've seen it happen to a three-year-old. Biology just happens. And that mm-hmm. signal goes to the brain. And you know what happens to that little boy who's 3 years old? He's supposedly getting a whipping in seclusion. The door is closed. His bottom is down. He's unclothed. He gets a paddle after a couple three. He notices, oh, my goodness, my penis is hard. Do you know how effed up that can F up a kid emotionally? People, let's be real here. So I'm bringing that into this present conversation here, and that is that we have to recognize, you know, when we, our children and how we're treating our children, what we're saying to them, how we're punishing them, how we're giving them consequences for their behaviors. Yes, I'm going to put this back out here again. Those fast-tailed little girls we just heard stories about, I can better bet at least 70% of them had some kind of physical, emotional, or sexual violence perpetrated on them. Promiscuity, early promiscuity, is one of the symptomologies that is shown in our culture, okay? And then, again, the emotional abuse that comes from that, you know, I saw that show with Oprah, and it was a great show that she got out that information. But when I look at those men and many of them who were taking responsibility and going to counseling, just even how difficult for those who had been in counseling for some time to tell their story in front of everyone, they had trouble regulating their emotions. They couldn't, because they were abused so young, you know, they couldn't express emotions safely, which is one of the reasons why I made this handout called the feelings handout, with a list of feelings so that we could learn feelings, emotional words, and where they go and how they are appropriate, so we can talk to our children. We can talk to our neighbor. We can talk to that mother who's still in these churches where we know this stuff is being propagated. We can talk to them in a language that they can understand and help them understand that this kind of behavior of as a child, can you imagine a little kid getting a hard-on when he's getting a beating? Just
you know
imagine
what?
How
really easy to see, Dr.
And
Bev. That's
also
really
for little
see.
Girls, for little girls, I want to put this out here because a lot of therapists want to throw me under the bus when I say it, but I'm going to slam it out here anyway. There is, and most women who talk about having been sexually raped, whether they've been touched, whatever, I still call it sexual violent rape, they will, you know, say to you that not only do they feel guilty and that they feel ashamed, that they have trust issues, because in that one moment of them being hit, I'm going back to that spanking, whooping, beating thing again, hit on the bottom, or when they are being penetrated or touched inappropriately, however, many women don't want to say it because they don't want anybody else to know. But I'm going to tell y'all, there's a split second where biology takes over and there's a slight orgasm that happens to that child that their brain can't even comprehend what an orgasm is. That little boy can't even comprehend biologically, emotionally, why his penis would get hard. You know, so we bring this back around to church, sex, secret, and shame. Let's put it all together and connect the dots about it.
You
yeah,
know what?
Someone
you're
just
absolutely right.
Silence is dangerous. You're right. Black Freak Thinker, you're right. Silence is dangerous. People, let's start talking about this stuff.
Silence is betrayal, Martin Luther King. You know, if you're sitting there and you're a boy and you're laying there naked on a bed with your ass up and your penis on the whatever the material is, and you're moving around because somebody's hitting you, yeah, you're right, Dr. Yep, your stuff would, your dick would get hard. It just would. There's no way for it not to. Okay?
Yeah.
There's no way for it not to.
And so when you try to put that biology and that psychology together, those mm-hmm. are people who
yeah.
who want, if they can manage somehow to break the cycle for them, to at least come to the awareness, you know, I need some emotional help.
Can't
you know,
Dr. Bev, you got some people in the chat room. They right. are wanting you to basically, if you can show them the studies about the children with the sexual responses to, you know, the spanking, they want to see if there are studies behind that. If you can get some links to them a little bit later, you can post them on my wall. And I had one particular person ask for the particular name of watching the children or making the children have sex with each other, because you were talking about the different types of pedophilia. And they were just wondering what was the particular name of that pedophilia with the children or the adults forcing the children to have sex with each other.
And I wanted to get to that, and I'll get to that in a moment. In February of 2003, please somebody Google this for me, because I, for whatever reason, I'm not able to get into the chat room, guys, and I have so many things I want to put up. It's just ridiculous. So someone please Google for me. February 2003, it's called The Brain Briefing, Child Abuse and the Brain. It is a piece of research that it gives it to you right there. And when I'm able to, I will, like Kim said, I'll go on Black Free Thinkers and I'll put some links up there for you guys, because I do want you to have this information and know that the problem of sex, guilt, and abandonment is with those children who grow up to be young men and women, who grow up to be adults, that we, who are working on our emotional health, we might become attracted to them. We might fall in love with them. You know what? Yeah. Let's just take it full circle. If you're going to believe part of the story, you have to believe the whole part. And, yes, they are going to have some difficulty with relationships, the sex, the shame, the abandonment of, let's say, the church, the abandonment of their parent. Abandonment, period, just has a whole lot of issues with it. I do a webinar on abandonment. So, guys, please get in there. I mean, learn some of this stuff. The other thing that I want to express is that there are many of us, and we're online and we're talking, and I can see people in the chat room, and they're going at it. I want to say to each and every one of you, how many of you have been in therapy? How many of you have worked on your story, underneath the story, underneath the story, so that you can be not only the best you can be, but better than you can be?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, definitely. And, you know, yeah, definitely we need to address it. We need to do the research. We need to look into all of this. It's just as important that we talk about these particular issues. And different people are going to have different opinions about certain things. And it's just a matter of us, again, addressing it and getting the appropriate help out there. We had a young man in the chat room, and he was talking about his dad and how his dad would pretty much just string them up. And
with handcuffs.
Yes, with handcuffs. And, you know, when he was telling that story, I just get sick. You never know what someone has gone through and what these people are doing. That was his own father. Come on. So, you know, our hearts definitely go out to those of you who have experienced all of these different things, and we're just trying to get some information out there to educate you so that you can understand what was happening to you, and also to let you know that it was not your fault. That's number one.
Yeah.
You didn't bring that on yourself. It was not your fault. You weren't alone, and I want to talk a little bit more about the shame here, because a lot of them grow up, you know, and become adults, but they still have that shame inside of them, and they've been convinced that they did something wrong, not only by the predator or the perpetrator, but sometimes their parents or their relatives or the other people. Someone was giving the example of the little girl who was the blockhole, and, you know, she was doing what she had been taught, you know, and Travis was right. Someone should have asked that young lady who taught her these things.
So we need to put the ass in jail. We need to put them in jail right now. Okay, look, I don't understand. Eddie Long, there's other victims there that just never spoke up, but watched the church people cheer for him and boo and hiss at the victims. Well, it's a good thing I didn't say nothing.
Right. Yeah. Well, they say here's another piece of research. This is from 210 as well. It's written by Rick Neuert, N-A-U-E-R-T. Please, somebody Google that for me. It's called Sexually Abused Children at Risk for Adult Psychosis. There's a new report that suggests that children who are sexually abused may be at a higher risk for developing what? Schizophrenia and other psychotic disorders. Do you understand that? They've established that these children are more likely to have depression, anxiety, substance abuse, borderline personality disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorder. And many of these children have suicidal ideations and suicidal behavior. Yeah, when I talk to you, I'm going to give you nothing but what? Sex, okay? Here's some warning signs of emotional abused children. When you see them extremely withdrawn, one of the things that connected this to me was in the story about the young woman, how strict her parents were. Here's one of the things that I also researched. Like, why don't people tell? Why don't people tell what's happening? You know what? Those parents, they probably knew what was going on inside that house. That's why they were so strict on her. We find out oftentimes, and I'll give you a story of a young woman who walked into one of my offices. This woman was coiffed. She was beautiful. She had on designer everything. The makeup and everything was perfect. The moment I saw her, I said, this is going to be one who there is a violent race history. And other people who would see her, like walk in church or walk down the street, they would think that this sister had her thing all together. When they're too perfect like that, step back, okay? Step away from the light. This facade that she put on in front with the clothes, the Armani this, the shoes, that was all to cover up her pain, her psychosis of always wanting to kill herself, the depression. In her church, she was told not to go to people like me because I'm crazy, okay? You got the pastor. You go talk to your deacon. You do this. People, when you see them and they're just all too perfect, when you see those little boys where, you know, it's like they're in the military, they're the buttons lined with the...
Are you leaving?
Check.
You're
check
leaving?
It out.
Yes, we can hear you. Who is this?
That was Raina talking to someone else.
Oh, okay. So go ahead.
Yes, so those warning signs are there. And when you see children who are excessively withdrawn, fearful, anxious, like if they drop a cup and you see them just kind of freak out, know that something is going on. In those strict households, that's where most of the abuse is, because you know what people will say? You know, I don't want to break up somebody's home. You know, only bad people would abuse their children. You know, child abuse doesn't happen in good families, not families who go to church every Sunday. They only happen in poor families or neighborhoods. That's BS. It happens all across racial, economic, and cultural lines. Do you hear me? And the family who have the most to hide, baby, they will keep them stories in the closet. It's a myth. Not all predators are strangers. They are members of your family. There's the coach. There's the piano teacher. They're those people. They are those people. They don't look like, they don't have a, they're not the devil with the horn. That's a BS story.
You know what, Dr. Bev? I was working with this woman on this documentary about, you know, survivors of childhood abuse. And she was saying that her father would be beating them on the regular, I mean rough beatings. And he was raping them. And yeah. You were happy that it was the rape and not the beating, because he'd call you and you'd come over there timid, tippy-toeing over, and he might smack you in the mouth, or he'd tell you to go get the lotion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool
stuff.
Here's some warning signs of sexually abused children. These are facts. Trouble sitting or walking. Displays knowledge or interest in sexual acts inappropriate to his or her age, or even seductive behavior. When you see that in either a little girl or a little boy, y'all please wake up. Something is going on here, okay? If they make a strong effort to avoid a specific person, like, I don't really want to go over, you know, spend the night at so-and-so's house. If they go crazy about that, people, pay attention to your children. Here's another good one. If they don't want to change clothes in front of you or somebody else or participate in physical activity, check them out. If they got an STD or they're pregnant, especially under the age of 14, check it out. When you see little kids wanting to be over at Beverly's house rather than to stay over at their house, you know, we don't call that running away from home. That kid, well, they just want to be over there. It's a reason. Something's going on at home that's real dysfunctional, you know? And when you have a parent, and that's where that psychosis come in, because with some of these pastors, they either beat you with hell and damnation, they give you fear about having sex, not having sex before you marry, not before you marry. look, people, we have more people who are in the church who are underdiagnosed and not diagnosed at all. I know personally of pedophiles who work in the church, one who is a choir leader. He had the audacity to come to my office because he was getting off probation and he needed a psychotherapist to sign off on his paperwork. So I said, well, okay, you know, well, we have to do a psych eval, you know, because you don't have to hit the PayPal button for me to do this, right? We started doing the psych eval. I asked him what was he in jail for, because he had done like 15 years. Oh, you know what he was in jail for? For repeatedly raping his daughter. And his daughter has two children by him. And you know what this MF had the audacity to say to me? My daughter loves me and she forgives me. She understands that I take responsibility for all my actions, and I'm no longer like that. But I definitely want to work with my church choir. So, Dr. Bev, can you sign this off? Dr. Bev can't say on the air what she told him, but it was not pretty, okay?
Yeah, and it happens, and it's prevalent, and I won't say prevalent, I take that word back. It happens more often than we suspect, and it needs to be talked about. We need to pay attention, and we need to find some kind of way to help these people, to help these children in particular, because, again, going back to that example in Florida with the young lady who was impregnated by the pastor. The pastor denied it and called her every kind of name in the book, from the pulpit, you know, to when he closed the Bible. Her parents sided with the pastor, and all of them ended up in jail, and the young lady had the baby and was put into foster care. And that same pastor, again, is preaching, and they put him in a different church, and he's up there, and they banned the children from the church, all because they want him there, because he used to be the pastor of a mega church. So they're thinking that he's going to build their church up to be another, you know, mega church, and they're banning the children, which, I mean, I guess we can see that as a good thing, so maybe the children won't be indoctrinated, but it all boils down to the fact that all of this evidence has been presented to them. The DNA shows that it was the pastor's child, and look at how they treated that one young lady. And I'm just looking at it, you know, looking at it from a different perspective. What is going to become of her? You know, how is she dealing with this, knowing that this man is being heralded yet again by people who turned against her that were supposed to be there to protect her, including her parents?
You know, I'm going to give it to you straight up, and I'm going to give it to you raw, okay? What those children, when that pastor, they already know he's a card-carrying pedophile. The adults make the children leave the auditorium. You know what those children are learning? Shame, guilt, and fear. And if any one of them who are being led out of that auditorium, if any one of them is experiencing any of this sexual violence by anyone in that church, do you think they're going to speak up? That's where emotionally there is another DSM disorder, and it's called reactive attachment disorder, where, and guys, you know, my comedian might want to help me on this. You know, you've seen these adults, men and women, you know, they're in love, and, you know, they'll get into an argument and start a fight, and the girl will go, just get away, don't touch me, don't touch me, don't touch me, don't touch me. That kind of stuff right there. You know what? That person has had their boundaries crossed. And I say, please, if we want to stop this history of violence, if we want to break this cycle, especially in the church, if any of you have a history of child abuse, and you have children of your own, this is the time, especially if you have children of your own, when feelings that you may have repressed, or as I just gave in that example, you know, where the woman never told her partner that she had been raped by the father or the pastor or whoever, but she is acting emotionally inappropriate in that moment for what's
she's
happening,
having a flashback,
baby, we
right?
need to have it addressed, because a lot of times when these young women and young men, when they have children and their children become about that age they were when they when the perpetration started with them, do you know that will trigger them and will send them into a tailspin? And I have stories that it's unbelievable. So, yes, I say that if we want to break the cycle, if you have a history of child abuse, you know, having your own children can trigger strong memories and feelings that you may have repressed. If this has happened to you when you were a child or at a later age or whatever, please come to somebody who is a professional. If you are shocked, overwhelmed by your anger, you feel like you can't control that anger, baby, Dr. Bev is telling you, you might not just be angry. You may be depressed, and for good reason. Let's find some new ways to manage your emotions and break your old patterns.
You know, there's
not a... And we also talk to them about the pitfalls and the traps, because, you know, I also want to make sure they understand this, because now that the church has discovered that there is money in therapy of some sort, they've established their own school of therapy. You can be a life coach, you can be a Christian counselor, ABC, a Christian therapist, and all of that. And many of these, the majority of them, are uncredited and unqualified, but yet it's big business. It's money. So they will try to steer you toward one of their people within that particular industry. And, again, it's money-driven. And I'm just asking people to be discerning just across the board, you know, whether it's, you know, secular or religious or what have you. You know, some of these people can screw you up more than where you already are. They can make that situation even worse. They can exacerbate it to a point that this person is almost at a point of no return. And I won't say that there is such a thing as no return, because I believe we can all make a turnaround of some sort. But it's just, I want them to understand that there are some people out there, and their objective is to exploit you, to manipulate you, to use you, to prey on you in any shape, fashion, or form. And we just want to get the information out there so that if it's happened to you, that you can reach out and talk to someone and get some help. Again, you know, earlier I was talking about recovering from religion. They're launching a new program, the Therapist Project, and they're working on that now. That's going to be launched soon, and they have local groups as well. And there's help out there, and they will refer you to mental health professionals in your area that can help you overcome some of these issues and even, you know, even address it. Or in some cases, again, you know, when Dr. Bev was speaking earlier about the guy who had a $500 a day drug addiction, and they started going through the layers, like peeling an onion, one layer at a time, to figure out what was at the root of his drug abuse, of his drug addiction. And it takes time. It takes time. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. And we just want to let you know that there are other people out there that have been through some of the same things, that you're not alone. You do have a support base, and we do care. And we're just extending our hand and letting you know that, you know, we're addressing these issues. We're no longer going to sweep it under the rug or ignore it or, you know, be shamed into silence, because it's time out for all of that, you know. Our society and in our communities, you know, they're taking a nosedive. And I believe that the root of many of these problems are mental health issues. And it's no shame. There is nothing wrong in getting help. Don't allow the pastor or the leadership or other people who don't know any better, be your cousin or your neighbor, to shame you into not getting any help, because then they want to label you crazy. Forget what they're saying. Get yourself some help. And that's all we're saying today, that, you know, with these secrets and the shame, we have to address that, you know. And that's why we defined what was happening and what was going on. And just want to let you guys know that we definitely care. But we have a call that's been holding for a minute, so let's bring them into the conversation. 757, are you there?
Hi, I'm here. I just wanted to share my story, and I'm glad you guys hit on so many points.
That is so true. I am a survivor. My dad was a pastor and still is a pastor, and he's the one who sexually abused me. And when I got older, I got married, and my marriage ended. And I knew from that point that, because we were taught, you know, get married and have kids and everything's going to be all right, and as long as you put God first. Well, I did all those things, and I had a career, and then my marriage ended, and I was real upset, and I knew that something wasn't right. So I put the brakes on. I said, wait a minute. I got to get help. And I knew not to go to a Christian. Everything in me said, do not go to a Christian therapist. You need to go to a different type of therapist. So I have two children, and I started writing a book about this subject and how do you trust God when the man of God is the one that hurts you. So during that cycle, I started the book like in 08, and probably about a year ago, when I started to research the scriptures on sexual abuse, I noticed that, especially with the Tamar story, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that, but Tamar denied, I noticed that in those books that no one stood accountable or responsible for these women, for those women being violated. And so what that made me do was kind of throw the, because I was trying to use the Bible to support my story. And what that made me do as I was researching it, it made me just chuck the Bible. Because to me, that's programming people to not, the same Bible you read every day, every Sunday in church, you're programming people to not take responsibility and not be accountable for women that are being violated. So I just thank you for this call, and it really helped, and you guys are hitting on so much stuff as far as the relationships go, abandonment issues, it's so true, and it is important to get help, and I'm glad I did get help, and getting help is still, it's still a process.
Yes.
So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you so much, my dear, for calling me. And having, again, that courage to step forward and share your story and get it up and out of you. I see there's a lot of talk going on in the chat room, and I want to clear up some points that I made. Number one, I have dreadlocks myself. So having dreadlocks, no, today you did not learn that having dreadlocks means you're crazy. What I'm saying is that among the young black males, they cannot tell you, they don't even understand the word anxiety. So one of the ways that I have found and processed is that you'll see them just sitting there kind of twirling and twirling and twirling their locks just unconsciously. They're not conscious about it. They're just doing something out of habit. I'm saying that is anxiety. Anxiety is when you have a thought or a process, okay, that you continue to do. Like, I want to stop thinking about whatever. And
right.
But the more that I don't want to think about it, I keep thinking about it. And so how young black men are showing that kind of anxiety is by twirling, you know, and twisting their locks, okay? I was just saying that that is just only one symptomology, okay? It's not in the DSM-4. It's in Dr. Bev's world. Secondly of all, I want to thank the person who said anxiety can be shown in many ways, especially when children have been raped prior to adolescence and if it's been by more than one perpetrator. They have a greater risk of developing psychotic symptoms, 15 times greater than the general population. So they will show their anxiety by being self-mutilators. They can cut,
mm-hmm.
cutting themselves, pulling. Someone was making fun of someone who was pulling out her eyelashes. And
yes.
I knew when I saw the young lady, I immediately, because we were in a public place, went to her defense because pulling out eyelashes, it's an anxiety disorder, okay? And they can't help it. They have to pull it, even though it hurts. So I just wanted to get that kind of cleared up here in the chat room that there are many symptomologies for anxiety, and people show it in different ways. I was using that example with the dreadlocks as
Dr. Bev?
Yes.
Dr. Bev, yeah, I can see very easily that somebody twirling their hair, if it's a dude twirling their hair, it don't mean they're being molested, right? It might mean that they trying to figure out how I'm going to feed my little brother and sisters today. It could be anything, little thing
Thank
like
you.
That. The woman I was talking to, she said that her father raped her and would bring other dudes over to rape her when she was like 8, and said that the place where they would do it was in the woods. And she said now anytime she's by at somebody's house, if they got a sponge that's kind of mildewy, it triggers that. It brings it all flooding back to her. So you don't know what to trigger somebody. It could be. It could be popcorn. You know what I mean? It could be. It could be a battery on the floor. It could be anything. It could be anything.
Exactly. And then also, and let's explain, Dr. Bell, define triggers so people will understand what
means. Okay. Trigger. What I mean by that is, let's just say, for all intensive purposes, connect the dots. Okay, let's say that I had something, that we have a child who is 3 or 4 years old, and they are being raped, and it's violent, and that kind of thing, right? One of the things that happens with human beings emotionally is the will to live, okay? So let's say you're a 3 or 4 year old, you got this big, tall person, and they are doing some horrific things to you. Well, if you're a child, okay, you know, you want to go to someplace real safe. You want to get away from that, but you can't get away from it because that person is bigger than you. Do you know what the mind does? Do you know what the heart does? The heart tells the brain, let's leave this body.
Yep.
Let's go. We're not
going to
feel this. We're not going to feel anything. We're going to leave our body. And so they just, it's an emotional way of
detaching. Yeah. When they're seen in a Forrest Gump, when she runs out, far, far away, far, far, let's go, far, far away place. Remember she did that?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So they up and they leave their body. It's detachment. That's what happens. And so then secondly of all, just think if you're that child and at such an early age, you have to protect yourself by disassociating from your own body. Think about that emotionally. Now, you're now moved from 3 years old, you're 8 years old, as in the example that you gave. Okay, so now it's not only become just a behavior to keep myself safe that I, you know, disassociate from my body, okay, that I'm here, you see me, I'm talking to you, but I'm really not here. Well, by the time they get 8 or 9, it's probably become a pattern. When that example you gave, when Dad said, go get the lotion,
mm-hmm.
on automatic response, they just left their body, wasn't there, wasn't thinking about it, anything to not feel that emotional hurt and pain. They leave their body. They cannot show up for themselves at the moment. They can't beat, hurt, fight, kill. They cannot stop what's happening to them. So it becomes from a behavior to keep yourself safe. Then it becomes a pattern. Well, now they're your adult girlfriend. Guess what? First time y'all really, really get into it and she say, no, look, no, I'm not tonight. I got a headache. Well, you know, you're feeling a little something. So you go push the issue and she goes straight off ballistic. Oh, it then went from emotional behavior to keep herself safe to a pattern that is a habit. She may be so in love with you, but in that one moment, something just clicked, and that's the trigger. It's a connected dot.
Overboard. It don't have to be you went overboard. You just touched her knee the wrong way, which was the exact same way, or the back of her neck, or her ear, or any little thing, or elbow, whatever. It could be any little thing like that. You weren't doing nothing. Hey, baby, and you touch her on the shoulder, and it just is the same hand pattern that was done to her at the wrong time, and you're taking her back. And just like she tried to go to the good place, away from the bad place, you just took her from a good place to the bad place.
Exactly. And that's why I say, what can we do most to break this cycle? You know, if we want to tell other people that they need, you know, some emotional tools and skills from a professional. People, I am a licensed mental health counselor for the state of Florida. I'm a nationally certified counselor. I am also a certified Gestalt psychotherapist. I am also a highly qualified supervisor for the state of Florida, and I teach other therapists, psychologists, behavioral health centers. I teach them courses on exactly what we're talking about here. So I have a education, knowledge, and an expertise to say, yes, get professional help. Break the cycle of abuse. I know it can be difficult, but if you're finding yourself, whether you're male or female, young or old, I've even had a 64-year-old woman. Do you know she couldn't tell her truth until her husband died, and that was what sent her over the edge, and he was abusive? When she came into my office and told the secret that she had been holding on to for so many years, that vicariously, without her knowing it, she couldn't understand why her kids were the way they were. Because, baby, you can't repress and hold down that kind of secret shame and guilt and think that it's not going to seep out. Get some therapy. Get some parenting classes. Get some intervention. Your children and other children and other people will thank you for you getting help for yourself.
Yes, then that is very true. And, you know, again, this conversation here about, you know, the secret sex and shame, again, this is a conversation, you know, we can't just, take and deal with in one episode. We're definitely going to continue this and talk about it even more in depth, different things. So, again, you know, Dr. Bev gave you all her information, and I'm going to post it in the chat room. Here's her iTunes link, as well as her website. You all can go out and take a look and talk to her. You can reach out to her. She has a public profile on Facebook as well as her own personal profile there. But you can reach out to her. You can reach out to me. Maybe if you have some questions, send us some questions. You can inbox us. My email address is blackfreethinkers@gmail.com. And Dr. Bev, you can give them your email address.
Yes, please. Dr. Bev, everything is Dr. Bev Mental Health. You can go to my website. I have several methods for you to contact me and LinkedIn with me. I also write many blogs that I freely put in links with research and that kind of thing. I think there's probably about 200 blogs that I have up on drbevmentalhealth.com. And you also have in my resource area of my website, I have 25 radio shows that you can get knowledge, information, and education for free on topics such as this. Before I go though, I would like to say one thing about reporting child abuse and why people don't do it. We've talked about it much, but I want to be very clear, statistically clear, and give out a phone number. If you suspect child is being abused in any kind of way, it is critical that you get them the help that they need. Reporting child abuse sometimes for some people seems so official, they don't want to get involved, and many people are reluctant to get involved in other families' lives, understanding that some of the myths behind reporting may help put your mind at ease if you need to report child abuse. Now, here it is. It's this. People don't report because they feel like they, what if I break up someone's home? Please, people, the priority is the child. Let Child Protective Services, somebody else, make that decision. But clearly, if you feel like that child needs help, it's not about breaking up a home. The home is already broken up. It is, and in fact, true. You are saving a child's life. Number two. Well, you know, if I report this, then they'll know it was me, and then my neighbor's going to know it was me, and the pastor's going to know that I was the one that reported him. Wrong. With all reporting for any state you're in the United States, is anonymous. You do not have to give your name when you report physical, sexual or emotional neglect or abuse or violence to a child. The child abuser cannot find out who made that report. Lastly, look, it's not going to go away just because you don't say anything, okay? If you feel like, well, it won't make a difference what I have to say, but you have that gut feeling that something is wrong, take this from Dr. Bev with all my heart, with all my love, with all my passion that I do what I do. Please, if in your gut you feel that something is wrong, it's better in Dr. Bev's world to be safe than sorry. Even if you didn't see it, but you see these patterns, okay, don't let that child or children slip through the cracks. To get help or report abuse, the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline, 1-800-422-4453. That's 1-800-4-A-CHILD. There is also a 24-hour parent hotline, 1-888-435-7553. And again, I say it is always, always, always a good idea to seek professional help. Okay? It's an okay thing.
Excellent, and thank you for giving us that information, and we'll be posting it on the Black Free Thinkers as well as Dr. Bev's Facebook page so that the information is out there. But I want to thank everyone who listened in, everyone who called, and those who will listen to the archive. Just want to let you know how much we appreciate you, and we're looking forward to bringing part two to you. So thank you so much, and you all have a great weekend. And Dr. Bev, thank you so much. We appreciate you, and we thank you for calling in and being our guest expert today. We just want to let you know thank you and how much we do appreciate you.
Thank you for supporting my passion and my beliefs in Dr. Bev's world. Enjoy.
Good night, everybody.